Patrick Henningsen talks on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, everybody. All right. It's great to have you with us this morning on this absolutely sunny and cheery day. It's not yet sunny here where we are in the Pacific, but we're going to get there. The sun will be up pretty soon. But hello to everybody around the world, wherever you are in the world. Thank you so much for joining us for this live broadcast. I'm Patrick Henningsen, your host, and we've got an extremely interesting program lined up for you today. There's so much to unpack. So much is going on over the weekend. We're going to be joined in a couple of minutes by Christian, who's our research assistant for the show on this segment. And we've got a couple of interesting stories. Well, the dark winter predictions are in. We're going to go through those and see really what we should be paying attention to, and also the asteroid project by NASA. There's a lot to talk about there, and you probably heard the top of the hour headlines. I commented on that with TNT. I've got my reservations on that. I don't know about you out there, but I think we need to have a conversation about this. You know, this is messing around with celestial bodies, basically, is what NASA is doing. But what do we really know? What have they actually done? What in terms of documentation? What do we really know? Is this a lot of this propaganda? Is this space race stuff? Is this part of the new Cold War? We'll unpack some of that later in this hour with Christian. And we'll talk about Ukraine in the second hour. And there's a lot to go through. And I'm going to be pulling some what I consider to be key clips and key segments from speeches. We're going to look at Russian diplomats. We're going to look at what they're saying officially. And we're going to be looking at what the sort of this unhinged class of bureaucrat that dominates Washington and Europe is just completely off the cliff, you know, like of reality. So I don't really know what to say about Europe. In America, there's a chance that they might be able to pull back from this a little bit just because this election's coming up and it's not a very popular topic anymore. Ukraine, it's getting a bit long in the tooth. The t-shirt, Zelensky's t-shirts are, well, they're letting off a bit of a odor right now. So it's not as cool as it was last spring. And everything's going to be focused on domestic U.S. politics as all people care about. It's going to be a lot of pressure put on Washington, on the White House, Democratic Party, to chart some kind of roadmap with this, not this open-ended thing. Biden did this interview with 60 Minutes and just left it open-ended. So we're gonna back the Ukrainians as long as it takes, is whispering to the guy on 60 Minutes with a kind of creepy Biden whisper. Long as it takes, We're gonna give them more weapons, lots of weapons. Anyway, We'll kind of work our way through this because I think a lot of people believe that we're reaching an impasse on this right now, and I think it's true. This week's a game changer. There's no doubt about that. With the referendums in the Donbass regions and also in Kherson South and in Zaporizhia, which is sort of south central, the referendums are a game changer. And I think that you're seeing the panic because, you know, the Western countries that fancy themselves as nation builders, Iraq, look at Iraq, they're running into this sort of double standard of hypocrisy, and they're really hitting a wall with this. They don't know how to respond to Russia. Russia's giving a masterclass in nation building. That's all. I'll leave it there until the second hour. And the third hour, we're going to be joined by Blake Lovewell. He's a writer for 21stCenturyWire.com. He's a great pundit. And he's written a really stunning piece of journalism, in my opinion, on carbon credits. And you be the judge. I'll tell you what, I know it's a good piece of journalism when I start reading it and I'm learning stuff. And I've studied this area pretty extensively in terms of the whole climate, the climate scam, the climate movement, the climate cult. I've been working on this, studying this really since 2006, 2007. So I've kept up to date along the way. And what Blake has put in this article, which is actually up at 21stCenturyWire.com right now, is you know, this is, I didn't understand how this scam worked, the carbon credits thing. And what Blake is showing is that they're moving these to personal carbon credits. We talked about this. We warned about this. We talked about this many times over the last couple of years. If you listen to the Sunday Wire and the UK column, we've talked about Greta Thunberg, while she was elevated to this sort of celebrity position. What was the purpose of that? We've interviewed Corey Morningstar from Canada, as a great researcher who kind of exposed all this from the beginning, that with the whole Greta cult. It was all about personal carbon credits. I mean, that was one of the main things to push through, to get people to take ownership. So think about Chinese social credit, but like put a green tint on it. And this is exactly what it is. They're calling it voluntary carbon credits. They're putting the option on your ticket, whether it's air travel, train, ferry. They're starting off with the low-level stuff, train journeys, ferries across the English Channel. Of course, this is going to get shot up to the sort of airline travel level. So you pay your volunteer. Do you want to get a contribution to offset your terrible journey? You climate criminal. How dare you travel by air or boat or whatever? How dare you? How dare you, says Greta. Pay me, says Greta. Pay me. Pay me to offset your carbon sins. Pay me an indulgence tax, says Joan of Arc, the angry Swede. Look, oh my goodness. Anyway, that's the conversation we're going to have in the third hour. So I'm sure you're going to be entertained, as Russell Crowe said in Gladiator. Are you not entertained? I hope you are. By the third hour, you will be. You will be. As Yoda said, you will be. Right. More pastiching. Popular films. You don't need films and fiction with what's going on in the world right now. I mean, look at this. I don't know where to begin. I'll have to pass over the Russian-Ukrainian stuff mostly, but Nord Stream 2 pipeline. The pressure dropped to near zero last night in the pipeline, and there is damage done. I worried about this. I've spoken about this before, the potential of this, that pipeline connecting Russia to Germany. What's to stop the U.S. or some kind of a NATO operation to sabotage that pipeline at any point along the Baltic seabed? Okay, it's a long pipeline. This is the area we're in right now. This is the zone we're in right now, which is asymmetric warfare. Nobody knows quite what happened. Is this terrorism by a NATO state, or just sabotage of infrastructure? Would the U.S. go that far? That's a good question. Would the U.S. or Britain go that far? Who else could it be? Who else could it be? Who would do such a thing? That's the big question. Would they go that far? I think they would. I think they would. I think if they felt that they were losing, and if you look at what's unfolding right now in Ukraine and the former territories known as Ukraine, formerly known as Ukraine, I think you have to open up the door of possibilities of some of these things that we're seeing right now. Now, I don't have confirmation, and neither nor is Russia saying. And here's another thing, from a geostrategic point of view, from a diplomatic point of view, being the canny operators that Russia is, if they knew that this was sabotage, they couldn't actually put their exact finger on it in terms of how, where, and who did it. Anywhere along that sort of long pipeline on the bed of the Baltic. Is this the sort of thing that you would come out publicly, or would you, if you had the intelligence, would you keep it somewhat under wraps? Because there's leverage both ways on something like this, because both sides might be involved in this sort of thing. What Russia might do, being the canny diplomats that they are, they might remain vague and shtum about this, even if they knew or had an idea of what happened. They might remain rather vague and shtum on it. And then what would happen is you would see a reciprocal retaliation by a piece of Western infrastructure. And this could happen any time from now up till within the next year, 12 months. And if that happened, the West would have to stay shtum as well, because this is the sort of unspoken, unwritten rule when you're dealing with these types of activities. And neither side would like to see an all-out escalation. Russia would probably play this cool, even if they didn't plan to retaliate, not retaliate in a like-for-like manner against, let's say, because they've been running fear-mongering about undersea internet cables in the West. You say, Putin's got his eye on their internet cables, okay? They've been running that stuff for years. And that's the type of thing that would strike fear into the hearts of the average Westerner, because what would they do without their internet? I mean, people would just go into an apoplectic shock if that happened. So this is a powerful narrative, is what I'm saying. So this is what's going on in the world right now. This is what's going on in the world. These are unprecedented times, at least for this generation. At least for this generation. Let's take a break here with TNT, Today's News Talk. I'm Patrick Henningsen. We'll be right back with Christian and more news headlines on the other side.
You should hear what Hescher is talking about.
The referendums on joining Russia are continuing in the Donbas republics and the Russian-controlled regions of southern Ukraine. On Sunday, the turnout already reached the required 50% threshold in Donetsk and Luhansk republics. Kherson has so far demonstrated lower turnout, with nearly 49% of voters showing up for the referendum. Polls across the two regions and in the Donbas republics are set to stay open for the next couple of days. So there you go. Ukraine about to get smaller, about to get a little bit smaller, it looks like. I'm sure that the mass media cartel will do their best to tell us that evil Putin has annexed these locations and leave out the fact that many of these locations have been under attack for 8 years or so.
Hescher on TNT Radio.
Public school is the instituted agency of socialism throughout every community.
The U.S. government has no authority to have any role in education.
We're going to lose our very republic if we don't stop this indoctrination of children in government schools.
What happened to us in China can happen here.
Have one kind of education and then call it equity.
It's about outcomes. It's about trying to force us all to be equal.
I think we're going to have a race civil war in our hands.
We are exposing kids to pornography as early as kindergarten. Parents just don't know.
No, not anymore. Not anymore. Parents need to wake up. They don't have the interests of your child at heart.
Truth and lies in American education at salemnow.com.
When a crisis hits, close to home and across the globe, nonprofits are on the front lines, ready to serve.
Keep coming, keep coming, keep coming.
The demand for charitable services has skyrocketed, and nonprofits are rising to meet the needs. Healing. Nurturing. Rescuing. Honoring. Protecting. Caring. Inspiring. The work of philanthropic organizations of all sizes, across all missions, has never been more important. And it's donors and volunteers like you who make all this possible. Thank you. Together, we change the world. The Nonprofit Alliance.
When the forgotten poor are suffering and in need of healing, they wait for a ship unlike any other. Mercy Ships, the largest floating civilian hospital in the world, with volunteer medical staff and crew who donate their time to save lives. Heroes of mercy, like these.
Every human being has the right to be treated as human, to have a place at the table of the human race.
If you could just see the look in the patient's eyes or the smiles that you get when lives have been changed, then it would make it all worth it.
We bring hope and healing to one person, but that person belongs to a family, and that family belongs to a community.
Together, these heroes of mercy and friends like you bring hope and healing to those who desperately need it.
Thank you!
Thank you!
To learn more about Heroes of Mercy, go to mercyships.org today.
Brian Stelter and Liz Cheney gone in the same week.
And that's just the start of draining the entire swamp.
Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
All right, everybody. All right. Welcome back to our live broadcast this morning. This is the Patrick Henningsen Show going out globally this Tuesday. And we've got a lot of ground to cover on so many different stories today. Of course, in the second hour, I'm going to be breaking down the Ukraine from very different angles, a number of different angles. But right now we're going to go into sort of more, well, there's kind of a story that I'm hoping that Christian, who's going to be joining us right now on the line from the UK, might be able to help me kind of figure out, because I'm a mixed minds about this. And Christian, I don't know about you, but when I saw that NASA was firing a rocket of some description against some asteroid, I thought, wow, is that asteroid heading for Earth? And is this to save us, or are they running a test? And they say they're running a test. And I'm like, what could possibly go wrong there? Like, what do you think about this? Have you seen this story?
I have seen the story. Yeah, I watched it about a year ago when they at first did the launch. It's NASA's DART, and it's heading up towards Dimorphos, which is an asteroid that's about 6 miles away from the Earth. It's kind of in orbit, effectively. It's coming by here. So the aim, of course, is to hit it and to see what happens. Is it for to test, obviously, space-age technology with the goal of, you know, could you nudge an asteroid just enough that should one be on its way, that is very likely to happen. Given the course of the world's history, it's happened very often. It's bound to happen at some time in the future. And I understand that there's a point they have to test the equipment as if it's, is it possible? I mean, for years we thought about, could we fire a nuke off? Could we attach rockets to one? Could we heat the surface of one by lasers or whatever? But this actually is the first actual test they're going to be doing or have now done, and aiming a rocket at an asteroid and for collision, and that collision happened yesterday, and they are up in arms about the success they've had so far. So they said it was basically a bullseye, the Elena Adams said from John Hopkins University for the physics laboratory there at NASA. It hit exactly where they wanted to, but I guess time will tell whether it actually had the effect they wanted, or may have now inadvertently put something in a slightly different orbit that could be now a danger in the future, perhaps.
Well, that's my worry, Christian. That's my worry. When I see people tinkering around with celestial bodies, that's not a joke. I mean, so as a British man, do you trust the U.S. federal government? Because NASA is a U.S. federal government agency. Do you trust? Would you put the faith of the world in the hands of a few federal bureaucrats who made the decision to run this so-called test? What are your feelings on that?
I guess from the world perspective, being a person of the UK and being a member of the Society of Earth, do I trust America's government interests, which I'm pretty sure they have their own agendas and plans behind this? I do think there is essentially an altruistic approach to this to protect the Earth somewhat, but of course all things are layered, and I'm assuming there would be the potential, I guess, for the Star Wars weapon systems that are up there in space. Is there a chance they can actually use asteroids against adverse nations? you know, I wouldn't put it past them to want to test these things. And you can only imagine the way that the world's going right now that these options would they want to put on the table as prospective weapons.
This is my feeling on this. I don't trust that if, like you said, firstly, if they nudged it out of orbit, and you know they can't calculate, you know, the trajectory or the new path. They think they can. They can run some mathematical models. But I mean, how precise is this? This is a government that claims that it could vaccinate away a microscopic particle, which they claim is SARS-CoV-2, i.e. COVID-19. Or that's the government that said that, you know, they can lock down the population. It will sort of slow the spread of COVID and destroy their economy in the process. And then basically say that it's not their fault after all that. I don't trust NASA. I don't understand why they're running this test, because the risks are potentially really high. Because my feeling is this, if there's any asteroid of significance that is on a collision course, actually on the collision course with the Earth, the last one that was, I don't know if you caught this, Christian, was huge, and it was a near miss, and they didn't know about it until after it had passed the Earth. It was one of the closest near misses ever. I don't know if you saw that one. I think it was a year or two ago. Yeah. And they didn't know. They couldn't see it.
Yeah, is this the one that it came out of the direction of the sun? So thus we technically were blind to its trajectory. And there are hundreds of thousands of these objects up in near Earth orbit, or just running around the sun, running around in quite obscure orbits. And I mean, throughout history, I mean, I was listening to a podcast by a geologist called Randall Carlson, who he literally runs a monthly podcast where he covers various impacts that are found in the near history, like go back to the 1700s and 1800s that have hit all across North America. And their numbers are like 300,000 small hits that all cause devastating fires. But so it's now a case of what happens if one of these hits a populated area. So far, that hasn't happened in more recent times, but it's on the cards to happen, and there is a likelihood it will.
Yeah, I mean, Russia's had a major strike in Siberia. It did take out, like, windows in, like, I don't know, something crazy, like a 50-mile radius or something. You know, there's a real powerful strike. But the question is, you know, this is the age-old question, Christian. Is a man with certain levels of technology pretend to achieve godlike qualities in terms of doing godlike acts, like rerouting asteroids? Okay, but is the risks when you start meddling at that level? The butterfly effect in space is unknown. So that asteroid could eventually come around and come around and come around. It's gone off its orbit. And then who knows? That could hit another asteroid, and then you're hitting the Earth in 100 years. We can't calculate these things. It's very hard to calculate these things. But I just have this, I don't know, it's maybe a primordial sense of caution. I don't know. But this same plot has been pushed in movies like, you remember Armageddon with Bruce Willis? Did you ever see that one?
I did, yeah. And there was a Deep Impact that came out literally in the same few weeks, that period of time. And then there was a whole breath of disaster movies featuring asteroids and meteors and comets that happened after that. I mean, it primes you, doesn't it? It primes you for fear these things have a potential to happen. And I guess, you know, considering the Earth's history with collisions in the past, twice a year we pass through the Taurid meteor stream. That's caused impacts over the course of hundreds of thousands of years. I mean, there is a risk. I guess we have to try something that might work. Whether this rocket will actually prove to have been effective, we don't know. I saw that the time that it hit, and they said it was 17 miles off target, but they still consider it to be a bullseye because that's where the area they were aiming for, but they will not know if it's actually made a difference to its orbit until they do any more calculations of where it's rolling to next.
Yeah. Yeah. So these are my concerns. They're sort of, it's almost like this is reaching sort of religious level, biblical level, even beyond biblical in some ways, but, you know, messing around really in space. And it's really the U.S. government that's taking the lead on this. So, you know, I think, Christian, this is kind of Cold War level posturing, because to boldly go where no man has gone before, well, where can man possibly go but project his power out into space? We haven't gone back to the moon for whatever reason. Don't want to go down that rabbit hole in such a short time on this segment, but haven't gone back to the moon since 1971 or whatever. Why not? It shouldn't be for a lack of technology, right? So here, instead of exploring the planets, that dream's kind of squashed for the moment. Mars, that seems like a distant fantasy in terms of man's mission to Mars. So we're just going to project our tech out into space and start shooting up asteroids. I used to play Asteroids as a kid. You remember that video game?
I used to play that too. So you're right about the mission to Mars. Had a lot of oomph about it like a couple of years ago. Obviously, Elon and Bezos actually promising to send a man to Mars by 2030. Then you have like China saying the same thing. I mean, so that space race is an important one. That is the first real step that we're ever going to take out into our solar system. And it will be great to see if that actually happens. But the tech for that and the danger for it is still too high right now to bring that down to a manageable level, especially if you could for bringing them back. But you're right about sending tech out into the universe. That's always been that's the other stage of science fiction, is that, well, if we can't get anywhere, maybe we'll send our technology out there and see what happens.
Yeah, in terms of narratives here, I said beyond biblical, you know, so there's certain, in terms of the affairs of men, there's a lot that can be gleaned and learned from the scriptures, from the Bible, from other texts, you know, major religious tomes, the Quran, the Bible, the Torah. But in terms of when we're talking about out into outer space and manipulating celestial bodies, then we have to go to things like Greek mythology, because those lessons seem to be wrapped up in some of these great Greek epic tales and stories, like Icarus flying too close to the sun. But even beyond that, you know, which would make the gods angry, or as man is battling with the gods for relevance or whatever, it seems like we're getting into the Greek mythology territory here. Like, what is the moral here? Where are the lessons? What is our position here on this planet? And what business do we have out in space? You know, really, that's the big question. I mean, science fiction aside, Avatar aside, all of these things, there's a lot of stuff, that a lot of ideas people have. There's a lot of visionaries at NASA and in the space world, Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, they've got big plans to do big things in space. And that's great. And I'm interested in all that. I'd like to see that happen. But then this sort of thing, Christian, this is a bit like vandalism on some level, on some epic Greek mythological level. It's a bit like vandalism, like man's basically going a little bit beyond, he's going a little bit beyond his competency range here. What are your final thoughts on this? And I we're going to transition to the to something else, but go ahead.
But there is a parable there. There is a parallel also in the fact that, of course, in Greek mythology, they killed their creators to become the gods. And obviously those who believe they are gods now will perhaps seek to kill the gods that are currently set before us, of Islam or Christianity and the faiths of around the world, to prove their technology, their creation and our godlihood to ascend. We have to destroy those older gods. So there's an interesting parable being played out, perhaps, in technology against the original gods.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. I think that's I think you touched on something really important there, and certainly this is an area of discussion that's not often had. Certainly, it's not had in the media, but I think it's absolutely relevant here from a social point of view, from a civilizational point of view, from a biological point of view, religious, everything. I think this is a very, very important conversation to have in light of this latest news. So I'm absolutely flabbergasted by this story for some reason, Christian. It just touches me on a very deep level. There's something very profound about this question and this latest news story with NASA. I don't know. And also the last thing, I'll just leave it here, because did it really go down the way they said it went down? And how would we possibly know? And would they come back? I mean, would NASA come back and say, oh, we tried this risky and historic, unprecedented maneuver here, and it was a massive failure. Sorry, guys. And by the way, we just, that just cost $20 billion. And we might have even put the Earth in jeopardy. We're sorry. Hey, give us more money and we'll try it again next year. They would never say that, would they? I mean, it's just going to be, again, we're dealing with government here. What do you think?
I can see why you would say that, because a case of, oh, we need some more money from the taxpayers to see if we can do better than we did last time. That's always there, isn't it? I can imagine that may well be a plan.
Yeah, because they wouldn't want to lose face, because the Russians have a big space program. Chinese are involved as well. You can't document it. They didn't have a can on the tip of their missile. And they weren't, I'm surprised they weren't broadcasting it live back to mission control. And what was that?
I didn't know that. I actually thought they were filming that approach to a strike. Yeah.
I don't know. I didn't see it. Maybe is there footage out there? I don't know. Maybe there is. Is it CGI? How? The CGI is pretty good these days. So who knows?
CGI these days is incredible.
Yeah, so I don't know. But I'm hoping that this conversation will spur more people to talk about this, because I think there's a lot of different angles on this I think are pretty important indeed. And so, hey, winter's coming. You're in the UK. Let's talk about Vernon Coleman, Dr. Vernon Coleman. He's a great pundit and a prolific writer. And he launched an article a couple of weeks ago, predictions for the coming winter, and it's pretty stark predictions. This is all kind of in the wake of the death of Queen Elizabeth II, and so Vernon's kind of positing that there's a number of things that are going to happen this winter. So get ready, buckle up. It's going to be rough. What do you think? Have you seen his predictions? And you have any thoughts on these?
I did, yeah. So I did have a read through them last night, actually, when I saw the article. And I do like his, the first one straight off the bat is that the government will continue to spend money like children at the fair. As it stands, I'm literally maybe 2 or 3 feet from the Goose Fair, which is the UK's largest fair. There's like it's about a mile long, lots of rides there. People are going to spend money frivolously with a hope of making themselves feel good a very short period of time, and then realizing they were ripped off. And I think looking at what he says after this is that it's like a man giving up his job, buying a Rolls Royce, driving to France, buying a villa. So what you do, you push up your expenditure, you reduce the money coming in to reduce. So that leads to more debt, and that puts you in a position where you're throwing up hyperinflation, taxation going up, and then you're ultimately left in poverty. And it looks like that's what they are trying to make everyone get to. They want people in a state of poverty and abject misery, really. But under the guise of very short term, there's a lot of things to spend.
Yeah, I like that metaphor of the fair. And the cotton candy comes into mind immediately when I talk about printing up all this money. You get a nice, good sugar rush from it. And whoever has their hands out first and gets a chance to get it and spend it, and then the hangover comes, then the the drop in blood sugar level, dangerous drop in blood sugar level, that happens after the cotton candy and Jelly Belly rush. And so that's what I think. I think that's an apt metaphor, the fair. It is a fair. It's a wild fair. It's unregulated. It's dangerous. I'm thinking of those, you know, those roller coasters. Once in a while, Christian, you hear about the roller coaster coming around over the bend, and then one of the cars careens off and drops, you know, 50 yards into someone, and they die on the thing. They got to shut it down. I wish they would do that with government. You know, say, oh my God, tragic accident. We need to shut government down for a while and fix it. That would be nice, wouldn't it? When is that gonna ever happen? They say we have elections,
if you look at the Twitter sphere today, I mean, the number one trend right now is trust out. A lot of people are calling for a general election right now due to let's trust actions in government. Talking about even the U.S. Secretary was talking about government's taking the wrong course of action in regards to its financial responsibilities, and has found itself now being what was once a AAA and now a AA, and now going down to that of a emerging economy as opposed to a stable economy. So the fact that U.S. Prominent people are saying what you guys are doing over there isn't very good, I think it speaks volumes. And as such, now we've seen the pound and the dollar now come in parity, one-to-one with each other. That is unprecedented.
It is. That's what Brexit, in my opinion, that's what Brexit was all about. It was about Washington wanted to decouple Britain from Europe and then build a trade bridge directly with the UK. And make the UK a dumping ground for, you know, cheap US goods, basically. It was what America does with the third world. I guess they've already tapped that out. So they're looking for new client states, but it is the Anglo-American band of interest once again consolidating and moving together as one, and to the detriment of mainland Europe. I feel like I've seen this story before in history, but look, we'll take a break here with TNT, Today's News Talk. I'm with Christian from the UK on the line. We'll be back after these brief messages.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
I love when conservatives come to the rescue of other conservatives. Tooting their own horn, Fox News says Facebook has reversed a permanent ban on conservative children's book publisher Brave Books after Fox Business started asking questions about the ban. Brave Books publishes books for 4 to 12-year-olds. They told Fox that Facebook suspended them and denied an appeal. The publisher says they put out books that have pro-God, pro-America, and anti-woke values. Brave Books founder Trent Talbot called the suspension an existential threat to the company since they rely on Facebook advertising. The publisher produced a Facebook message which provided no explanation for the ban and stated that it was their final decision. Talbot called the incident a prime example of big tech today, adding they shut down small companies who say anything contrary to their woke agendas. And according to Talbot, a suspension from Google earlier this year was also reversed after Fox News reported on it. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
The Security Service of Ukraine, known as the SBU, is the successor of the Ukrainian branch of the Soviet KGB and was created after the Declaration of Independence of Ukraine in 1991. The UNHCR and Human Rights Watch have accused the SBU of systematically torturing political opponents and Ukrainian dissidents with impunity. The UNHCR found that in 2016 that arbitrary detention, enforced disappearances, torture and ill treatment of such conflict-related detainees were common practice of SBU. Yevhan Karas, the founder of the infamous neo-Nazi C-14 unit, has detailed the close relationship his gang and other extreme right factions have had with the SBU.
Democracy is under attack. Western governments are trying to regulate the internet to shut down free speech. The UK government will regulate and control disinformation and misinformation. Disagree with what government is saying, and you'll be shut down and could face severe penalties.
To find out more, go to ofcom.org.uk.
Lighting the fuse for freedom. This is TNT Radio.
All right, everybody. All right. Look, it's Tuesday, and we're broadcasting live globally. Thank you, everybody, for joining us, wherever you are in the world, morning, lunch, evening, late evening, down under in Australia. Hello, everybody down under on TNT, listening on the radio app, download from Google Play, Apple Store, TNT Radio app. You can get all your favorite shows, favorite hosts. You can get it on this app and download that for free. And by the way, if you're listening by podcast, if you subscribe to iTunes, Spotify, use any of those platforms, you'll find TNT there as well. So basically, TNT's got full coverage also on video sharing platforms like Rumble and many others. And of course, go to the URL tntradio.live and you can scroll not only your favorite shows and hosts, but you'll find the archives there as well, conveniently listed by segment, date, and guest as well, just below your favorite show or host in the listen back section. So, I mean, it's just really a listener-driven platform. TNT has got the feedback from the listeners. The listeners saying, this is what we want. TNT's providing it. I really don't see any network that's doing that, not to the level of this network. It's absolutely extraordinary. Great listener experience. It's really a network designed for the radio enthusiast, for the listener. TNT Radio. There's no other network like it, quite frankly, and we're very proud to be broadcasting here. Now, on the line right now is Christian. He's our research assistant for the show, normally joins us on this segment on Tuesday. And before the break, we mentioned Vernon Coleman's predictions for a dark winter. And there's a couple of interesting things on here, Christian, that I think are worth pointing out. And one of them is he touches on industrial action. So there will be many strikes. Workers, if workers receive notable pay rises, they will increase still further the level of inflation. So he's basically saying any pay rises, paltry pay rises, are going to get eaten up by inflation. That's a good point. The media doesn't like talking about that, obviously, nor do politicians, for obvious reasons. So this will increase the levels of poverty among those who are not members of powerful trade unions. The poor, the sick, the elderly will suffer the most. That's, yeah, absolutely true, especially the elderly, especially pensioners. The soaring inflation will help create a depression which will last for decades. This is just what the conspirators have ordered. What do you think about that one? That's a big issue. Of course, inflation is huge.
Yeah, it certainly is interesting. Of course, we have Liz Truss, who's very vocal in regards to shutting down the ability of the unions. She kind of ties into that quite nicely. They want certain restrictions and placements in place. So the idea is you now have to have a 50% turnout if you want to have a strike. I can imagine now that there will be potentially restrictions against people who are members of unions. We also see businesses, as it is, you know, actively try and get unions out of their business because they don't want workers uniting and saying, hey, we want better rates or quality or fairness happening here. And the companies almost have their own versions of unions within their businesses, as it were, so the larger, wider corporations do. But I know, I think we're going to see that kind of shutdown. Are we going to see people losing their income, the value, because the inflation is going to outstrip their ability to earn money, and it's going to drive them to hit the food banks more? I mean, I connect with a few food banks like in my local area, and they say they've now seen record numbers of people visiting them, and people who are in full-time work are now not a... That's someone who actually comes in more often now than they used to. As where you'd think it'd be the people who are literally on the poverty line, but now it's people who are working full-time are the ones attending food banks.
So what you're saying is that with inflation, with the cost of living, and let's call it like it is, Christian, the cost of living has been pushing up in the UK consistently for the last, you know, 30 years, but really rapidly in the last couple of years, 2 years. And so a full-time wage, a decent, what used to be a decent full-time job would offer you some security. People are having trouble actually balancing their monthly nut, right? Their monthly overheads. Yeah. And so things like food, what used to cost, used to go to the supermarket, and, you know, 30 quid could fill up, 30 quid could fill up a push basket in a supermarket. And now,
yeah,
30 quid might get you a full bag in some cases. So,
yeah, for sure.
So the food bank thing is no exaggeration. It's literally because the sums aren't adding up for people in full-time work. Incredible.
I think the biggest take out of that, of course, has been the rise in rent. I mean, most people now, if they're not on the social housing system, they're private renting, because mortgages are almost out of the reach of most people. So most folks are now renting, and they've now seen those costs jump and increase exponentially to either the rent company or the individual who's renting out their house. They're just reaping the benefits of this while they can. And now less of them are taking people who are on benefits or whatever, because they don't see them as being viable income.
Yeah, and plus tenants' rights, that whole thing is shifted. I think that's somewhat engineered. They put an incredible amount of leverage with tenants, where it's scaring off a lot of landlords. I'm of two minds of that, of course, because I've had nightmare landlords that won't fix anything. They'll freak out if they have to spend, you know, any money on the flat to fix something that's actually broken. So I'm of two minds on that. Everyone's been screwed over by landlords if you've had any career in renting. But I also see the other side. If they completely open the spigot and take away any right of landlords to evict a tenant or something like that, then I can see that's going to have a huge economic impact. Like, that's going to shift things in a certain direction where individual landlords or smallholders, they're not going to be able to really afford the risk. Plus, they're increasing the tax on people with second homes or buy to let. And then the only people who can survive, Christian, in that atmosphere are the Black Rocks of the world, or the bigger property management companies, where they've got reams and reams of flats. They hire lawyers. They've got contractors. They could even afford to employ heavies to come and basically intimidate tenants if need be. I'm not saying that that's happening, but who knows what things would look like in the future. But I can see the major shift going on the property market. It's very visible right now.
I was at a friend's party just a few days ago, and he was telling me how he has an all-inclusive. He lives in a multiple shared house. There's 8 tenants there, including the landlady who lives on site. And he was saying that now she's pretty much become an energy czar. You know, if you go into the kitchen, you turn the kettle on, you're expected to turn the light off because the bills were all-inclusive. And, you know, you can't leave the door open. Everything has to be, windows have to be shut. She says, because she can't afford the deal that she offered them originally on paper, that it's all inclusive.
Right. Yeah, I can totally see that. And arguments among people sharing property, you know, you're using too much power. Oh, you know, this guy, oh, yeah. Got a DJ living on the third floor. You know, you're going to have to evict him because he's using too much electricity. And we're splitting it evenly. All sorts of problems with this sort of thing, metering energy. So on the list here, Coleman, this is interesting here. Christmas will not be celebrated in any notable way by councils or stores. This will be blamed on the energy crisis. But in fact, the conspirators have long planned to do away with Christmas as traditional religions are removed and replaced by other things, such as Chrislam season, and favored by Tony Blair, the merger of Christian and Islam. So he's wading into that whole argument there. But just back up a little bit, that stores will not be doing the extravagant Christmas displays in order to save on their energy bills. What do you think about that one? Is that possible?
It's possible. I mean, I think for a long time it's been noticed that Christmas traditions in stores, department stores, were a big kind of British thing. You know, you go to your Co-op store or your Woolworths or your Asda, and there'll be a Santa there. There'll be lots of decorations and lights. And all that's kind of been well done away with now for maybe a good 5-10 years. And there's certainly a view that it's now, you have to say it's the festive time, because of course there's other celebrations around the time, whether it be the solstice or Kwanzaa or what the Israeli Jewish one is, they have around the same time.
Hanukkah.
Hanukkah, tip of my tongue.
Okay.
So you're not allowed to celebrate those kind of things. Now, that also plays into that, I think. But, if it's being sold on the fact that it's going to cost too much energy, therefore we can tone it down a bit, you know, I can see why they would want to do that. I mean, I was in my local supermarket this last week, and I noticed that the Halloween section is not called the Halloween section, and it's not promoting Halloween. It's actually promoting the Mexican Festival of the Dead. All this style is the Mexican style, are the face paints and but they're in that kind of a skull shape, and all the makeup is very very Mexican, very Central American, as opposed to the typical kind of Halloween that you would have on an annual basis here. And I saw that as an interesting marketing strategy to merge them together.
Dia de Muerta, yeah, the Day of the Dead. Very trendy, and definitely here in where I am in the Southwest U.S., that's definitely a big, big kind of cultural piece. Is that sort of more Latin American interpretation of that? Sort of, that's an interesting one to go into. But back to Coleman's list here. Crime and violence will increase massively as millions struggle to cope with the massive rise in living cost. So is this something that you think is happening in the UK, for instance? Do you think there's an uptick in crime and violence?
Certainly is. I mean, again, so where I work day to day in a major chain of a national supermarket, and our theft on a day to day basis is certainly soared. And I can see that that's going to be the case across most businesses. And now, of course, much like over in California, they've announced what it is, the value that the police will not attend because it's not worth their attendance. I mean, like obviously in the US, it's $995. If what's been stolen is under that, they won't bother attending. I mean, that's now happened in the UK. They've made an announcement of what that threshold is. So now you can imagine people are just going to go into shops, steal, you know, under that threshold and leave. And I think that's going to create massive resentment, certainly with smaller shops, smaller businesses where they can't afford to have stock that's not insured, as where in bigger places it is. That's going to cause shops to fail. You know, violence is certainly happening because people don't have. They're fighting for the resources they have. And so in the inner cities where people generally don't have as much money, I can imagine there is much more, you know, violence happening in the side streets, more robberies perhaps happening. It's worth perhaps looking at the crime statistics to see if there's actually, that's verifiable.
Yes, you know, indeed. Look, this is not exaggeration. So I was in London, I was in Pret-a-Manger. I think I was waiting to get a train at Victoria, popped into the local Pret. Usually, you know, this sort of thing, Christian, grab a sandwich and a coffee. You got 20 minutes before your train. And this youth who was a quite, well-built young guy, probably put him at about 19 or 20. And he just kind of barreled past me, walked in, boom, into the sort of the wrap sandwich section there. I see he just picks up a couple of things and boom, sticks them, shoves them right in his pocket, like very, very casually and deliberately, you know, and then just marches out. He didn't have a mask on. Didn't have a hoodie on. Just literally walked in, took what he wanted, and he marched out. I've never seen that before. I mean, I've always seen shoplifting like on the sly, but never like that. And so I think this is a thing. There's a sense of entitlement there, are you serious? They put a threshold in. What is the threshold on theft? What is it?
I don't think it's nationally known, but if it's £695.
Oh my God. You guys cannot allow this to happen. This is a nightmare in California. They've done this in places like San Francisco, and basically organized gangs are bum rushing shops with multiple people, minors normally they recruit because they know that they, none of them can be prosecuted. And so guess what? Stores are closing down branches and the prices are going up in stores that are still open because they got to compensate for the loss. So, wow, this is...
The insurance of these places must be skyrocketing as well. It stays a viable business.
If you can even get insurance, I mean, goodness gracious. Wow. That's pretty shocking, Christian. I am literally shocked to hear that they're taking that California route on lowering the crime threshold. That's just opening up Pandora's box right there. But thank you very much, Christian, for joining us this week on TNT. Much appreciated.
Thank you, Matthew. Have a good day.
There he goes, ladies and gentlemen. That's Christian's joining us from the UK. Look, we're going to take a break here and we're going to transition to the other side. We'll get into foreign policy and world events in the next hour. I'm Patrick Henningsen, your host. Top of the news.